This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and our mission every week here is to talk about different subjects that we think are interesting and important and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York and topical. And we try to keep you up on especially many of the organizations that are making such a difference to the quality of life that we have here in Western New York. And we recently were recommended to talk to and to call an organization called Compeer. And Mr. Kubiak, a very good friend of ours who is on the program recently, suggested that this would be a very interesting subject for our listeners because it is a group that is making such, as I said already, a big difference here in Western New York and helping so many of us as a social service agency and providing many services that are very needed all year round, but especially, of course, during these trying COVID times. So in the studio talking to us through the magic of my engineer, Jim, and what do you call on the magic, I guess, what are we talking to him? Just on telephone, right? Yeah. Yes, plain old telephone, right? And sadly, we're not together, but someday we will be again. Hi, Mr. Bowling. Thank you for talking to us.
Hi, thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.
We definitely
sharing with you about Compeer.
It's a pleasure for us. We definitely miss our personal interactions, but so does everybody in not only Western New York, but in the whole world, I guess, during this terrible time that we're going through. Let me ask you, Mr. Bowling is the executive director of Compeer. So let me ask you to start out by telling us, first of all, a little bit about Compeer and what they do.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity today. So Compeer is a non-clinical mental health agency. That means we do not provide formal counseling. What we do provide is we match individuals who have a mental health diagnosis, including veterans, older adults, children, and youth. And we match them with a volunteer in the community who serves as a caring and trained friend. And what happens is a lot of folks, when they are referred to us from their doctor or from their therapist are generally going to the beginning onsets of their mental health challenges, and they start losing a lot of their friends. Their family doesn't always understand, so they really need that caring person in their life who's looking out for them, who's checking in on them, who's really just a legitimate caring friend to help them on their road to recovery. That's our core program that we have. It is the one-to-one matching piece, and then we're also in Lackawanna schools working with youth. We're in Maryvale schools working with youth as well. We also provide what's called mental health first aid, which is a training program. It's an eight-hour training class to help people identify when somebody in their life is going through a mental health crisis, how best to respond to that. It's kind of like physical, you know, first aid, but for your brain. With mental health first aid, and we're the largest provider of that training program in here in Western New York. We trained about 1,800 people in 2019 and about 1,100 in 2020, which was a challenging year because we had to do a lot of it virtually, obviously because of the pandemic. So, yeah, that's who Compeer is. We've been around since 1973, and the Buffalo location is the largest of Compeer's affiliates. There's 50 affiliates that we have, and Buffalo is actually the national headquarters for Compeer too. So we oversee all the affiliates as well that are in eight states and in four countries.
Oh, so this is a national organization, basically.
International. Yeah, we have locations in Australia, Canada.
Oh, international.
And in the UK. Yeah, that's okay. So yeah, we have those locations as well. So the Buffalo site is the largest of all 50. But also serves as the headquarters for all 50.
We're very proud that we're ahead of the curve, so to speak. I have to go back to a couple of things that you said, okay? What does it mean to be a non-clinical social services agency? What do you mean by that?
Non-clinical, we don't provide formal counseling. We do not have a counseling staff, so we don't provide any type of formal therapy that somebody might be referred to by their doctor. So a clinical organization would be like a Best Cell, a Horizon, some of those organizations, but we are non-clinical.
I see. And now let's talk. What a wide range of ages that you cover. That must be very difficult. Now let's start out a little bit about when you said like youth, and you mentioned you were in the schools. How would you identify, or how would anybody identify a youth that needed this kind of compeer association?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So in the schools that we're in, and we've been in Lackawanna for about 4 years now, both the high school and the middle school, the students get referred to us from the counselors that are within the building, the counseling team. So there's generally a team within every building that provides mental health support, and those are licensed counselors. So those are staff members of the school, and they see the students quite a bit. And from there, they identify what students could really use the support that we provide in the school. In the school, it looks a little bit different than it does in our one-to-one community support. The school is a lot of small group work, so we're usually working with a group of maybe four or five students at a time. We have a partnership with Buffalo State College and Duville that we have students that are in the school who are either master's degree level social workers or graduate or bachelor's degree level social workers as well. So we have our own staff in the building, but also a partnership with higher ed in order to provide that. And the intention of that is really to provide another layer of support for these students for their mental health needs. You know, a large reason why a lot of kids don't graduate from school or do well in school isn't always directly academic. You know, they may do well, you know, they may be very talented and do well in their book work, but they have so many other things that are going on that are competing against them and working against them from being successful in school and in life. And that's kind of where we come in and kind of fill in that lane.
This is so valuable because, as you said, a teenager is, I bet you 9 out of 10 could use this kind of help. Because let's talk a little bit about the terrible consequences of this COVID time. How has it been hard, for example, to identify these students because of the remote learning and because there's no interaction between the teachers who ordinarily, for example, would find these students that needed help?
Sure. So this year we didn't really add any new students. We just carried over the students that we had last year before the pandemic had hit. So those students are still the same students that we've been working with. It looks very different. We all can't wait till we turn the corner and can actually go back to the way it was. We haven't really identified any new ones yet. And then at Maryvale, which is a new district that we're going into, again, working with their school counseling team, they've identified students. So it's been a little bit more challenging, especially since the youth, you know, they're so much on Zoom and on their computers because that's how they're learning now remotely. So trying to do anything extra and over above that, they're kind of burned out a little bit, you know, of wanting to do it too much of that. So we're just working with the school at this point in time. So I think, you know, we're going to turn the corner here at the end of the school year and hopefully be back to normal.
Going back to pre-COVID even, is there still a stigma? Is one of the difficulties in identifying whatever age person that needs, you know, has a mental illness, is it difficult to still identify them or to have them speak out because of the stigma that always was attached to mental illness?
Yeah, so, right. You hit the nail on the head. That's one of the biggest reasons why people don't seek help. There's just a statistic that says the average person goes almost 10 years with their mental health challenges before they ever reach out. And the big reason for that is because of the stigma that's tied to that. One of the nice things, there's very few nice things that have come out of the pandemic, but one of the nice things that has come out of the pandemic is that mental health has risen to the kind of to the top of the surface here around people struggling. You know, people were struggling before going into the pandemic, and if you had mental health challenges going into it, they've only been exacerbated. So it's more on the radar now, and it's more open, and people are talking about it more. Especially the younger generation has really never had much of a problem talking about the mental health challenges. It's really been more of my generation and maybe folks that are older that there has been a long-term stigma, you know, tied around that for many, many, many years. But the needle is definitely moving in the right direction. We're not anywhere near where we need to be. But I can tell you from doing this for 4 years now, 4 years ago, there was little talk about mental health and the importance of mental health. And now it's everybody's talking about it. So it's definitely moving in the right direction.
You know, you even mentioned, for example, older people, older adults being more open about it and needing help, and veterans. Now, that's got to be really difficult, dealing with veterans and older adults, to getting them to come out and to get help.
Actually, the older adults have been fairly easy coming to us. We have a lot of older adults in our program. What happens with them is they lose family members just by people passing away. They lose their mobility and can't go places, so they get isolated in their houses or wherever they might be residing. That's been one of our more successful programs, has been the older adult piece. They're just more open and willing for our program, of just wanting a caring friend, somebody they can talk to on the phone. They're not all, not everybody's all internet, capable of doing those. So we do a lot of phone work with our older adults until we can get back to doing a lot more face-to-face. The veteran population has been a difficult one for us. Vets generally like to work with vets. So we really can't match a typical volunteer in the community with somebody who's a vet. The vet really wants somebody who's a vet so they can really relate better. And so that's been a challenge for us. We've been working with a lot of other vet agencies to help be more successful with that. And we've been doing a large number of group activities with the vet population instead of one-to-one components. So it's been probably our most challenging population. Youth has been by far our most successful. Older adults are second one. Adults are third. And then the vet piece has been our most challenging.
I can see that, because a lot of them are suffering from PTS and other experiences that they would want to share, that they would feel is only understood by another person who's been through that, experience. So that's probably...
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I could not believe when I read that you actually trained a handful of law enforcement with the city of Buffalo, and I was really anxious to find out what kind of program that was and how that worked out.
Yeah, that's our mental health first aid program. So that's the 8-hour training class where somebody goes in and they learn how to deal with somebody appropriately who might be going through a mental health crisis. And that's what, a lot of law enforcement comes across at any given time in any call. Somebody that might be in crisis, might be having a very, very difficult time mental health-wise. And if they're not trained in order to appropriately provide the right amount of support at that time, things I think we have seen on TV can go wrong, badly wrong, seriously wrong. So this helps to provide them with some tools of how to appropriately interact with somebody who's going through a very, very difficult time at that moment. So, yeah, we're thrilled about that partnership. We just started a bigger partnership with the city of Buffalo and training, some of their employees. And we do a lot of stuff with higher ed and school teachers. And really, mental health first aid is for everybody. You don't need to be in a career or profession where you're dealing with people. If you're a parent, you should take mental health first aid. Anybody and everybody should really take the training class, because you never know when you're going to need it. One in four people in Erie County are suffering from some type of mental illness. So, and a lot of people out there are undiagnosed. And so that's just one in four that are diagnosed. So people are struggling. It's tough. I always tell folks, either you have a diagnosed mental health challenge or you're just not diagnosed, and none of us are perfect. We all have our highs and our lows and our tough days and our easy days. And our program is all about our folks coming alongside folks and helping support them in their mental health recovery.
If you just tuned in today, you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And our guest today is Tim Bowling, who is the executive director of COMPEER, which is a non-clinical social service agency that facilitates one-to-one mentoring of volunteers with individuals that live with a mental illness. So we've come to that part where I mentioned and emphasized the word volunteers again, because I wanted to spend a little time explaining how the volunteers work and, you know, how it actually plays out. When, how do you train them? Where do you find them? How do you associate the patient with the volunteer?
Volunteer recruitment has always been a challenge for us, only because we've always had the need for our services has far exceeded the number of volunteers that we've had. Where we got very fortunate this year, almost a year ago, so it would have been around May or June. We got very fortunate in the sense of the news media picked up on our phone buddy program, thanks to Rob Kubiak, who you had mentioned about, earlier before. So we were able to do an interview on Channel 2 and Channel 4 and other stations and Buffalo News and stuff. And so we had a big rise of people who wanted to volunteer in the program to be our part of our phone buddy program, which was a program that we had started because we couldn't no longer meet face-to-face with our friends and clients. So that had attracted well over 100 new volunteers for the agency, and all those folks ended up being matched largely, honestly, with a lot of our older adult population who want that type of match, the phone buddy piece. The youth really weren't too much interested, but they're older adults and adults. So our recruitment for the volunteers in general, it was more of a science than an art. We used to do a lot of things. We used to go in front of schools and sit in the foyers of colleges and universities, and we'd get a lot of interest, but they wouldn't turn into a lot of volunteers. So we found that most folks come do a lot of our own research. Most folks come through our website. So they hear about us, they go to our website, and then they come in and they fill out an application in there and go through there. So we've done a lot more work around that in the recruitment area. A large number of our volunteers are in their late 20s, early 30s, and ironically, a lot of them are professionals. And a lot of them are in field, similar to, you know, and what we're in social work and social service types of field. So they're kind of what we call the helping field, nurses, other folks like that. So that's where our recruitment comes. When they come in, they go through training. It's a 3 to 4 hour training program that they go through. It teaches them all about mental health. Then we have advanced training classes. They have to do extensive background checks, as you can imagine, because they're going to be meeting with individuals.
I was just going to ask you.
It's very, very, very thorough. It takes for about 6 to 8 weeks from the start to finish for somebody to get all the way through. And I'm kind of glad that, you know, we don't try to make it on purpose difficult. But that really does help to weed out some folks that may no longer be interested. And it kind of works, you know, to our advantage as well. But, you know, we're up 160% from last year of volunteers for the agency because of the Phone Buddy program. So all of our staff are at capacity right now. We're serving way more folks than we were serving before. We're a lot of other agencies right now, and I talked to other executive directors. They're struggling to keep their doors open because they're having trouble providing services and serving the folks that they were serving before because of the pandemic. On ours, everything is completely flipped around. We have just an onslaught of people that need our services.
Yes, well, I was going to ask you, but I knew you would say how much more need there is for your services during this period, because the very aspect that you're working with or trying to help is very often isolation that people have, and no one to talk to, even in ordinary times. And so now this has to be exacerbated 1,000 times over. And the need because of people being quarantined or not able to go about their daily lives, basically.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there. Isolation, people don't realize unless you're in the field, isolation and loneliness kills people. It literally kills people. There's been so many studies on that and stuff that have gone on in COVID and with a lot of folks that are in nursing homes and people can't go and visit them anymore, and how the death rate, not because they came down with COVID, but because they've been isolated and lonely, they give up and they have nobody. And I think we all, you know, hopefully, I think people in general have a great understanding that, you know, if they have an older adult in their family, of how difficult that is and that isolation. And, you know, I know my mom is 84 years old, and thank God she's very active, and, you know, I'll see her a little bit later today and stuff, but I know she doesn't have the, not everybody has the support system that she has, and I think a big reason why she has done so well is because of our family and the support and her friends and folks. And she lives on her own and has lived on her own for well over 10 years after my dad passed away. But that source of support for the older adult population especially is so crucial, because loneliness really does shorten a person's life.
Now, they were showing specifically how it affected the people in nursing homes. No, not nursing homes. Hospitals, when they were isolated and they weren't allowed to have visitors. Nursing homes, too, I should say, but both of them. How seriously it affected their mental health when, like I said, they weren't right. allowed to have visitors. And so that makes a big difference. But the ironic part is that all of us are missing. I said to you at the beginning, at the top of the program, I wish you were in the studio with us face to face so we could talk to you, but thank goodness for the miracle of which I was trying to explain the simple word telephone, but it's the same idea. It's the same idea, you know, that I'm giving you. When you mentioned a trainee, like, who trains, like, say you wanted to become a volunteer and help somebody, who does the training of the volunteer? Would it be a professional, a social worker, a psychologist? What kind of person?
Yeah, so Lisa in our office does all our training. She's our director of volunteer recruitment, so she does all the training. Periodically, we will pull in individuals for specialized subjects, but she's well trained in order to do that. The training as a whole doesn't go very, very, very deep into everybody's mental health challenges and all the mental health challenges that are out there. It's more about the appropriateness of the match, what you can expect in the match. There is some information around, obviously, mental health and some of the things you might see with some people. A lot of folks we see, you know, they have depression, anxiety, may have bipolar, and some of the far, you know, I don't want to minimize any of this, but it's far less serious mental health challenges that other folks might be experiencing at some of the other agencies when you get into more of the clinical side of things. So I know she provides all the training, and then, like I mentioned, then we have advanced training classes that folks can take as well. But, you know, Penny, one of the things that we constantly hear from our volunteers is they get as much out of their match as much as the client or their friend does. They're just so thrilled to be able to do what they're doing, and then they realize, oh my gosh, I'm getting as much out of this as much as the other person is getting. And the ideal situation is at the end of the year, and they make a one-year commitment to that individual, is that turns into just a natural friendship. And that happens all the time within our program. What started out as a formalized match and this was a compere thing turns into these people go on to be friends 10, 15 years, and that's just a friend. And that's all they did was meet through compere. And that's the epitome of the success of the program right there.
I was thinking to ask you that about whether the relationship very often continues, and I assume it does. Could you give us some examples, not by name, of course, but of situations where people, you know, helped other people and stayed in contact with them and became a longtime friends or in some kind of association?
It's just interesting. Just a lot of individual stories pop in my head because our staff, at staff meeting all the time, we share a story right off the bat because we really feel it's important that, you know, let's don't always worry about the data and the numbers all the time, but let's get down to the people. There's a match that's going on currently where the match, the person who's the mentor, we call, is matched with another adult. And she had shared the other day that the person she's matched with is calling her now more so than she's contacting her to check in on how she's doing. So the match has completely flipped around. The other person is like, I know you get kind of lonely, and how are you doing? So it's just this mutual support system that they both have. And that just really turns it into just an amazing, this one's gone on for about 3 to 4 years at this point. But that is the beauty of it. It just turns into, from being something that was formally set up through an agency of compeer, and turns into just a real friendship. Somebody called the other day and left a long voicemail just thanking us for matching them with somebody and how much it has changed their life. And we shared that out to the staff, and everybody got to hear that. And it's good to hear the stories because, you know, we have a lot of data and we have a lot of stats and percentages and stuff, but every once in a while, you just need to hear, like, when this comes down to meet the road, when the rubber meets the road, and what this really means to people when you hear how it's changing lives for a lot of these folks.
Well, the thing about this program is you can see the reward. It's rewarding, as you already pointed out, on both sides, but also it's very rewarding for the volunteer when they can not only continue a friendship, but see a change in the person that they're, I don't know if you call it counseling or, you know, talking to, in their attitude towards life. And also it makes you, I think, a little optimistic, which we need in this world right now.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people need hope. Hope is a big thing, and hopefully we are turning a corner here with the pandemic, you know, with the vaccine being out, and we won't be having this conversation a year from now. But it's really changed a lot of folks, and I think a lot of people are going to come out of it, you know, change for the better, you know. And I think relationships, going into this, I don't think people valued their relationships as strongly as they should have, because you could see anybody and do anything at any time. And now that you couldn't, the value of relationships, there's just so much research that's out there about the quality of life and the quantity of life, that the people who live the oldest and who are generally the happiest are those who have at least two or three very close friends in their life.
Yes.
Not hundreds, not a bunch of Facebook folks, but two or three people that they generally can rely on, that have always been there, and they're their closest friends. And that's superseding, you know, people, how much you drink, it's superseding smoking, it's superseding... Relationships is a bigger indicator for quality of life and quantity of life than anything else. And there's some great research out there about that.
Well, I think Compare is right on the mark in providing these services. So you mentioned you do have volunteers and you rely on them. And volunteers, I guess, means that people, their reward is not monetary, as we talked about. But you always, I'm sure, could use more volunteers. And you probably want everyone to know how they can reach you, not only to become a volunteer, but also to see if they need your services, because as you pointed out, there's so many people now who really, really are suffering and have mental health issues, not only because of the pandemic and the isolation, but just in general. So let's give everybody the information we need about how they can find you and reach you.
Sure. The best place to go would be to go to our website, which is compeerbuffalo.org. So it's all one word, compeerbuffalo.org. And on there, there's a volunteer application form. There's more information about our programs. If somebody doesn't have that, they can also call the office, which is our number is 883-3331. So it's a pretty easy number. It sounds like one of the law offices, one, now I think about it. So 883-3331. Yeah, call us today, 883-3331. Is our phone number, and then our website again is compeerbuffalo.org. And like I said, there's a few links on there that they can go to fill out to become a volunteer, and just other information about our programs and how they can be a part of the work that we're doing.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And again, we have been talking to Tim Bowling from Compeer, the executive director, and we hope that you've enjoyed our conversation and may have an opportunity to take advantage of this very important social services agency, non-clinical social services agency here in Western New York. Thank you so much for talking to us. Please join us again, everybody, next week for On Target. Have a good week. Be safe. Goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.